to Hard Labor and Money Splashes,
a podcast about the Rolling Stones.
We're your hosts, Natalie and Gina.
Sure.
This week, David and Bowie, Muddy and Waters,
Paige Dean and Guerraberg,
driver of the Winnebago. It was a very special edition here that we didn't think we were going to do. I don't know why we didn't think that we would do this. It's funny because how often, you know, our topic is the Rolling Stones, the greatest rock and roll band of all time. How often do they tour? How often do they tour our hometown?
Right. So it's the big show. And you were there.
And I was there. And it didn't occur to us that we might be doing this. But
if there were any justice, this would be, you know, breaking news, you know, on every news station. But for us, you know, this is timely.
And so, yeah, this is fresh. Hopefully I'll get this edited and posted in a timely manner. So this isn't, you know, months after the fact. This is very fresh. I just saw the show with my wife. I realized the first time I had seen, now again, this is odd because I realized this is the first time I'd seen them in concert in a very long time. And I think it's as far back as the last time you and I went.
Well, they were the first ever event at Ford Field. Mm-hmm. Before they had football or anything, the very first event was the Stones. I think it was the 40 Licks tour.
It was, and you and I went, which would be 2002?
Sure.
Okay, so, I mean, almost 20 years now, and they've toured since then, and for whatever reasons, I've missed them in various places. Like, I wasn't living here when they toured here, and then when they toured where I was living, it just didn't happen. And I don't think you didn't see them past that.
No, that was the last show I saw.
And we had seen them maybe one other time before that. I think we went to Spartan Stadium.
For the Voodoo Lounge tour.
Yeah, and that's going back into the, 94 maybe, 95, yeah. So, here we are. And I think this is a little bit of a different format we'll go with today because I think normally, well, we both have notes, but if this was a sports cast, I think I tend to do the play-by-play and you do the color.
I wanted to interview you about the show, really, because you were there.
So I was there, like Wayne Gale. I was in Granada. I was there. Which is a very obscure reference to anyone who might get a Natural Born Killers reference.
Or if you're a real, real deep RDJ fan.
Yeah. Yes. Let's take it from the top. Where should we start even?
Yeah. Well, let's start like right out the gate. Before they came on, they had this amazing Charlie Watts tribute.
Yeah, so the lights go down really quick and the rumble of the crowd goes up really fast. Very steady drum beat to Can't You Hear Me Knockin'. Mm. And they have these giant screens, I think four of them, you know, like one on each side and then two center stage. And probably 2 minutes long pictures and video of Charlie from all eras. And it went over really, really well. And we can talk a little bit as we get into it. But there's a little bit more of a tribute to Charlie that they do into the show. But it was a great way to set the mood and start the show. And
to start it, this is what's on everybody's mind and here.
Because this was a question, and I think we may have talked about this in a recent episode. I don't remember now, but it's, what's this going to be like after 60 years almost, I think, of having him behind the wheel? Like, mm-hmm. What was the show going to be like? What was the drums going to be like? What's the chemistry between everybody? And
well, I mean, okay, while we're talking about this, so how was it? Did Steve Jordan drop the ball?
I would say no.
Great.
I would say he did not. It's different, mm-hmm. but not bad. I enjoyed it quite a bit. Where we were sitting, we were very close, probably 30 rows from the stage, maybe a little bit. My wife and I were debating this, and I said, she said, we were in row 16. I'm like, I think it was row 16, section B or something, but counting backwards, very close, very loud.
No, I've heard that it wasn't just like a little loud. It was epically loud, and you needed earplugs.
I knew going in I was going to have earplugs. I've been to some concerts in the past. I've been to Rolling Stones concerts in the past, and I wasn't looking forward to having ringing ears for 2 days and the cloudy sound, the underwater sound your ears have for 2 days after that level of sound. And I like music. I like hearing things. I don't want to lose any more of that capacity.
I've always thought of that as part of the majesty of rock, if you will. Yeah. But now I realize like I need all the hearing I can get.
I had some earplugs. They did help. It cut down on that considerably, but it was still, there was a lot of ringing the next night.
I'm just saying, you know, the Stones, and they're pretty advanced in years, but they haven't turned down the volume.
Oh, no.
They're not rocking an ounce less.
No, definitely not. Definitely not.
So they open with Street Fighting Man.
Yeah, right after the montage, the video montage to Charlie, they make the announcement, you know, ladies and gentlemen, the Rolling Stones. They came out of the gate swinging. It was a great version. It was a great song to open with. I don't remember if I saw them open with Street Fighting Man before. They may have when we saw them. I'd have to go look up that set list.
Right.
It's a good opener. It's a strong opener. It's a little bit of a different version than the... This is probably something we can go down. Live versions versus recorded versions. And what's preferable, what's just as good.
What's better? Nature.
I always think the recorded version of that is very unique. The live versions are their own entity. And this is one where I'm like, it's very tough for me to pick one I prefer. Mm-hmm. This was great. There was no tentative... If anyone said like, well, I don't know what this is going to be like, and I don't know who would say that, but yeah, they came out punching. It was a terrific version. It was very loud. And this is where I think Steve Jordan, to me, the strength was there. His drumming is very strong and loud.
Good.
And so on the fast numbers and the up-tempo numbers, he's driving it. It was really good. Not that Charlie didn't, but we're going to get a guy in here who's going to underplay it or something. He didn't. No, he brought it. They came out.
There's no watering down.
Happening. There was no watering down. He really on the, and as we get into this, we'll see, but into the set list, the up-tempo stuff, it's a different feel, definitely, than Charlie brought to it. But yeah, he kept that tempo up and he moved them right along. I mean, he was moving these songs forward. So
great.
Yeah, it was a great opener. And it got everybody really into it right away. So, and it's strange because this is a song that if you're a classic rock Stones fan or you're someone who was trained by a classic rock Stones fan, this is one you're going to know. But if you're that other group of people who are Stones fans who are going just to go, it's the tourist thing, like a Disney World type stuff, this is probably one you don't know as well.
That's a great surprise for you.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's probably some people in that group who are like, I don't know if I, oh yeah, I kind of know this one or something. But that didn't stop anybody from being totally, from what I could see, totally into it. So,
mm-hmm. And you know, timely. You know, here we are again.
Yeah, I mean, you know, 1968.
Yeah,
yeah. So, and things don't change much.
So you know, I know you guys, but. We always, since we were kind of really young, we always loved Motown, so we can't come to Detroit. We can't come to Detroit and not do a Motown number, right? So here we go.
They did Ain't Too Proud to Beg.
Yeah, that comes in a little bit later.
The first time since 2007?
Called that out as being a kind of tribute to Detroit.
Since they're in Motown.
Ron Wood had been at the Motown Museum, I guess, the day before.
Sweet!
Over this tour, Mick's been going the day before the shows to the various cities, like in and around spots and taking pictures, posting them on Instagram and Twitter. We thought he might do some of that this time.
It snowed.
Well, he did, but like all the pictures he took were right outside the stadium, so I don't think he was going too far. But Ronnie and some of the crew and some of the backing musicians were at Motown Museum and got a tour and things. So they called this out that they were going to do it. A little bit of a surprise in a way, because it makes sense they were going to do a Motown cover. Makes sense that it would be this one. I mean, they've done a few of them now.
Sure.
Again, went over really well. It was a little bit of a different version than the versions they did maybe say in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it flowed a little bit differently. It was maybe a little more melodic from what I could tell.
Okay.
And they did not an outro, but the back end of it was a little bit different in like a call and response type of thing. So
neat.
Also went over really well. I mean, this is a Detroit crowd. They're going to really get into that. I think there was, when we talk about the different kinds of fans.
Let's talk about the different kinds of fans. What question I have for you there, like, so obviously everybody knows this song here, right?
You're
standing around people who are going, what is this?
Everybody knows the song, but then it gets back to that. If you're the diehard and the classic rock world, you'd be like, yeah, they did this one. It was a single off of It's Only Rock and Roll. And if you're someone who grew up with those people, you know that probably from that exposure. But if you're I'm not saying this is bad, but if you're the greatest hits package people, you enjoyed it, but you probably may not know or remember that they did that because it doesn't show up on a lot of compilations and things like that.
Now, how did you feel about the crowd there? Now, was it all sorts of ages? Was it middle-aged persons? It was it old people?
I would say it was, from what I could see, the majority was older, middle-aged and older people, couples, people who had had a lot of alcohol, which is common at these kind of shows.
Imagine that.
There's a guy who's far too drunk, far too early, before we've even gotten in the building, screaming things.
Well, in the world of edibles now,
yeah.
I mean, it's not like they can search you for the gummy bears you ate before you came in. Maybe who even knows?
You know, that might have been me 20 years, you know, 20 years. This guy was you 20 years ago.
It was me at the Voodoo Lounge.
Yeah, but there were a lot of younger people. There were definitely different ages. I don't know how many different demographics there were past that, but there was a mix, but it was definitely older people. We've talked a little bit, well, before we started recording here, about it's very crammed into this. The seats are very close together.
You had main floor, which is always kind of the case.
It would have been better. I mean, in the days of general admission, there were no chairs, and I feel like it would have been better with no chairs. The chairs just got in the way.
I think because of Travis Scott's. And okay, so, you know, in the 70s, right, The Who,
yeah,
famously, people were crushed and trampled. How have we not solved that in the last 40 years? We've had to work on concerts and events.
Yeah, because you buy a seat, and there's a literal seat, which is a very hard, small, folding chair made for a child, seemingly, not an adult person. And I'm not that big a guy, and the guy next to me certainly couldn't fit into it. But they're just taking up space because, especially on the floor, like, everybody stands immediately and you're standing for 2 hours because you don't see the show otherwise. I mean, you can see the screens or whatever.
If you're sitting, you can't see over anyone.
Right. So everybody's standing. So they're just kind of in the way. Like, I would have gladly given the chair up for that extra 5 inches of leg room. It's the same as when you fly, you know, so, hey, for an extra $50, you get 5 extra inches of foot room. I'll take it. Yes. I mean, just on a 5 hour flight, that makes so much difference. And in a 2 hour concert, that would have been beneficial. I still enjoyed the show very, very much. But I mean, if you're going to try to like move around and dance to the music and things like that, it's difficult unless you're very small and waifish.
So Keith sang Connection, which I'm surprised to see on the set list and excited about because that's a great song. And Before They Make Me Run,
which I was very happy with because that's one of my favorite Keith songs. Connection, I think he started getting, I mean, I think Connection he was doing when he did the solo tours, maybe even the first solo tour he did in the 80s, he did a couple Stone songs, and that was one of them. He sings the whole song in the original version. He sings the intro, and then Mick kind of does the verses. It's in the Shine a Light movie, so I think he started using it as one of his two songs maybe in the early 2000s, or maybe even into the 90s. I'd have to look, maybe, in some of the European tours. So
for me, I'm always just used to automatically thinking Keith is going to come out and do Happy and maybe a little TNA.
Yeah.
So this was a great change up.
Yeah, I think he's been rotating between maybe 5 or 6 songs on this tour. Happy being one of them. Slipping Away, I think, has gotten in there a couple times. I don't know if he's done little TNA this time or Through and Through.
Mm.
He came out and did a little bit of a speech to the crowd, walked up and down the catwalk, told everyone how glad he was to be there. It's good to be here. It's good to be anywhere, which always goes over really well.
It's good to be seen.
Connection was really wild. He was really into it. You'd pointed out that listening to the Wembley show, I think, he missed a lot of lines.
Right. in the most adorable way.
And he was missing a few lines in this one, but it was great
point,
fun.
My point is, like, that's nothing new.
No.
That's not because he's old. It's because that's... Keith is kind of rough and ready.
And there's a lot of enthusiasm behind it. It's another one that, you know, what I didn't see, though, this time is this is something that I think in years past, there's a certain, again, segment of fan or concert goer who this is when they're going to go, like, get popcorn. You know what I mean?
What?
Or go to the men's room or something because they're like, well, this isn't what I'm here to see. At this point, that's not the case. You know, I didn't see any of that, and I was in a good spot to see it.
I'm outraged at the suggestion because to me, like that, you know, well, as a Keith guy, this is the highlight of the show.
I would say these are, again, it's whatever greatest hits, standard greatest hits thing you might buy. You know, it depends what Keith songs. Happy's usually on there, at least, you know, if there is a Keith song. Connection went over really well. Before They Make Me Run, I think, went over even better. I was happy to see that one on there because that's one of my favorite ones that he did. And he did a great version of it. He was much more... I don't want to say animated, but yeah, the whole show really had that feel that I don't buy this criticism, but there's a segment of critics, it's called,
for jazz people.
Who sometimes will say like, yeah, you know, they do these shows now. It's like a Vegas feel. It's all very structured and it's not spontaneous and all this. And Mick himself has said like, well, spontaneity means mistakes is what I find most of the time. Go to a jazz club if you want spontaneity. But the show had a very spontaneous feel. None of the numbers felt by the numbers or anything like that. They felt very kind of loose and ragged in a way, but in a fun way, not sloppy. Mm-hmm. Well, Connection may have been a little bit, but Before They Make Me Run, I didn't think was at all. And that went over really well. I think I had seen him do that maybe one other time. So it was great that was his other one.
In a very dark period where I sank so low as to go to open mic nights, I used to do Before They Make Me Run. And everyone just look at me funny, like, what is this? You know?
Yeah, that was terrific.
They did Living in a Ghost Town,
which was one of my wife's favorite numbers of the night. Yeah.
That's been a hit, you know, a recent hit.
Yeah, their most recent hit worldwide. Graphics on the screen were really well. Mick kind of talked it out and said, well, you don't know this one really well, but I'm going to basically teach you the song. And he said, you can sing along with it. So people were singing along with the hook.
Yeah. You sound so good on the last one. I know you don't know this one as well, but you can learn it pretty easy. Yeah, it goes like this. Go like this.
You know, there's a lot of people who probably didn't know this one. And he, you know, owned up. He said, you don't know this one as well, but you'll get it. You know, played to the crowd very well. Maybe like Out of Control in a way, which is a great song on the record and an amazing song live because the crowd fuels it. And I think this was akin to that. Like the crowd getting behind it really took it in a different direction. And they played it slightly different. Yeah, everybody went down really well. I've been on previous Stone shows and they bust out new numbers. And you can tell some of them just, for whatever reason, the crowd wasn't going with it. And that wasn't the case at all. And it was fit in a really good slot between other, I guess it was a bit of a time slot hit, but you know.
All right.
Yeah.
If anyone out there is interested in this sort of thing, the internet has a website called setlist.fm, and it will give you the set list of shows, which is how I could prepare for this interview earlier today. And they give you graphics and stuff. And it said that they had a chart, and they said the most represented album was Let It Bleed.
Yeah, I did
with three songs.
I did a little of this in a different way, looking at, so Ron Wood has a longstanding tradition where he does a sort of a painting of the set list, of every set list they do after each show. And they sell them now as lithographs. After every show, you can go buy the one from your show. And so we were looking at it, trying to remember. There was only 19, 20 songs. It seemed like 35 songs. There was just so much goodness.
19 songs.
Yeah, which, you know, it was a very tight 2 hours, but it seemed like they did all this amazing stuff, and they didn't even do these other 30 amazing songs. It just seemed like it was only 19 songs. But when I was looking it over...
But if it's 19 great songs...
Yeah, I was doing a little math on it, and the 60s, I think, was the most represented decade by far. I don't think there was... I think there was one 80 song, one 90 song, and then Ghost Town was the 2020 song. So there was a couple eras that were, if you got to pick, there's a couple things that are going to get left out. Yeah, Let It Bleed. Let's see if I can remember. Gimme Shelter. You Can't Always Get What You Want. Honky Tonk Women. Is there another one or did I?
Oh, I didn't bring the whole list.
Oh, okay. But... I'm sure I can find that.
But what's interesting to me is, you know, because they just put out the set of Tattoo You.
Oh, yeah.
That they didn't do more Tattoo You songs or, you know, how many great songs have they put out this year?
I was a little surprised by that in a way. I think the only song from, I've got the set list here, the only song from Tattoo is Start Me Up, which you knew was going to get in there. Earlier in the tour, they did do at least once Trouble's a Comin'.
Mm.
I'd have to look up and see maybe what other kind of, I don't think they've done Waiting on a Friend this time. Worried About You was, there's a song vote, which we can talk about here too. Every show, they put up 4 songs and you can go and vote and pick what song you'd like to hear them do. It's the popular vote. It comes pretty early in the set. I think it's maybe 5 or 6 songs in. And I don't remember all 4, but for this Detroit show, the vote was Worried About You, Play With Fire, Wild Horses, and I don't remember the 4th one.
Mm-hmm.
So if listeners can write in or tell us what the 4th one was for the Detroit show. But in any case, Wild Horses was the winner. I had voted for Worried About You. My wife voted for Play With Fire. I was hoping for Worried About You because I've never seen them do that live. And I thought, to your point, this is a very long-winded way of getting around to saying this. I thought, to your point, that that would make it maybe based on that to a little nudge, like, well, this is one of our Tattoo You songs that we want to get on because we're promoting this new album. Wasn't the case, but
it wasn't even like the songs from this year. You know, they didn't push Living in the Heart of Love, Scarlet, my enduring favorite of the year, Crisscross, that I can't make it through a day without listening to. I think it means that the Stones are beyond promotion now.
Yeah, I mean, they don't need to. There was a thing in Reuters or something the other day that said that getting like 10 million a show at this point, and I think are either the only band to do it or the first band to do it, or maybe both, but no one's coming close to that kind of cut. I think you still have to do it adjusted for inflation, and it still puts them way ahead in terms of tour gross.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't do that, then probably U2 or somebody, I don't know, has taken that title, but you know, I guess it's like the moon landing. Like, you remember the first guy, but you don't remember the eighth guy. So it's just, you know, right. Sorry to whoever the eighth guy is, if he's listening.
You made it all the way into space. So that is badass.
Made it all the way
like
to
some
the,
people
to the soundstage of Kubrick's.
But I'm ready to posit this is like the Stones now are almost an underground band because they're not getting all right. of the machinery behind them. They're
right.
Not
it's come all the way around full circle somehow.
Yeah, they're just existing on their own merits, and they don't need to shill anymore. They're just like, hey, we're going to come out and do a show.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Hard Labor and Money Splashes, the podcast dedicated to the world's greatest rock and roll band, the Rolling Stones. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Email us at